Welcome to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. The fictioneers, the artists, the editors, and others. Brought to you by the PulpNet. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at the PulpNet. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at thepulp.net.
Oh, we're talking today, and it's like, well, this is spicy, and this is spicy, and this is spicy in men's adventure magazines, and then it's like, this is spicy too. It's like, yeah, it is spicy too. So it just makes sense because it's the evolution of pulp fiction in periodical form, and so of course they're going to draw heavily. And
in this episode of Pulp Tales, Bob Dice and Wyatt Doyle, co-editors of the Men's Adventure Library series, explore the spicy pulp elements present in one of the pulp magazine's successors, the Men's Adventure magazines. This Pulp Tales was recorded at Pulp Fest 2024 in Pittsburgh on Friday, August 2nd, 2024. Wyatt begins.
So, I mean, when it comes to the idea of pulp spice influencing and infiltrating Men's Adventure magazines, or MAMs, as we'll be calling them, we take a very broad view. This is because MAMs borrowed, swiped, adapted, and reshaped just about every theme that appeared in vintage pulps, other than the idea of having recurring characters appear in the magazine. And Bob remembered another pretty essential and spicy.
Well, there are several aspects in Men's Adventure magazines that you didn't have in the pulps. Cheesecake photos being one of them. That's kind of spicy. And then also the various kinds of true or faux true stories in Men's Adventure magazines you didn't find in the pulps. But like pulp magazines, one of the things that's interesting to me is if you say what is a pulp magazine? Well, you can find the definitions on the paper and types of stories, but look at the whole wide range of pulp magazines. Different kinds, different publishers, and that feature different writers. And last night, spicy pulps. You know, spicy pulps. Are they? You know, a good example of the pulp genre overall? Not really. And same with Men's Adventure magazines. You've got everything from True and Argosy and Saga, the top tier, to the low bottom tier men's sweat magazines, so-called. You know, which known for their over-the-top covers with Nazis and bikers doing bad things to women. You know, so it's hard to make too many generalizations about MAMs, but we'll try anyway.
I mean, and the themes, many of the themes that MAMs emphasized were included in the magazines because they had previously been popular in vintage pulps. And MAM publishers very much wanted to include sure things. Elements that had already proven popular and durable with male readers. But while MAMs are the clear descendants of pulp fiction magazines, they were definitely not the same. MAMs would cast a wider net than pulps. Most MAM titles offered a wide variety of content between covers. I mean, in essence, they tried to be everything to every reader. That was the MAM approach. It's like, we'll throw everything at the potential buyer in hopes that something will stick and they'll take it. MAMs would bring new ingredients to pulp's existing recipes. I mean, as Bob says, things that never appeared in pulps appeared in MAMs, and MAM stories would reflect and often respond to changing times and cultural mores, emerging subcultures, and new adversaries. But these additions were, for the most part, cosmetic adjustments to existing templates and tropes, often adding a more contemporary wrinkle. So Nazi villains could be swapped out for Cuban revolutionaries or communists, or biker gangs could replace juvenile delinquents as a group menace. But the story's stakes, essential structures, and approaches remained more or less consistent. As we said in the opening trivia question, MAMs also ran work by pulp writers and artists. If you were here in 2022, you'll recall our presentation on George Gross, whose artwork grace the covers of vintage pulps, and then MAMS. Then, ironically, paperback reprints of vintage pulps. We're looking at some of his pulpiest covers now. The point is, there's a clear pulp fiction continuum, not only of ideas and tropes, both literary and visual, but the originators and shapers of those ideas. Defining spice in period genre fiction is a bit of a mug's game. The more specific the definition, the more likely it is to spark debate, probably particularly in this room. We're not even going to dip a toe in attempting to define pulp spice. There are certainly more knowledgeable experts who could speak far more intelligently on the subject. But MAM spice, we can take a crack at. So in the kitchen, spice is something that adds a kick.
Let me add one thing.
Yeah.
Because I want to come back to this later.
Yeah.
Some of you may know the famous U.S. Supreme Court decision in 1964, where Justice Potter, in a decision on obscenity, said, "I know it when I see it." Yeah. That was a seminal case. There was a movie. It was a French movie, had a sex scene, and a movie theater in Ohio was taken to court, and Ohio banned that movie. And that went to the state Supreme Court. The movie was The Lovers. It's Les Amants, I think, in French. Supreme Court justices, that was upheld at the state level, banning it in Ohio. I went to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court justices overturned it. They could not all agree on why, and that's when Justice Potter gave the best answer, which was, "I know it when I see it. I can't actually define it, but I know it when I see it." Same with spiciness, spicy stories, both in pulps and in men's adventure magazines. You know, you kind of know it when you see it. It's not necessarily just one thing, but you know it when you see it.
Oh, we're talking today, and it's like, well, this is spicy, and this is spicy, and this is spicy in men's adventure magazines, and then it's like, this is spicy too. It's like, yeah, it is spicy too. So there was a lot. I mean, it just makes sense because it's the evolution of pulp fiction in periodical form, and so of course they're going to draw heavily. And I mean, the thing about spice too is we're defining. Oh, I'm too far away. The spice as we're defining it is like spice that you would use in a recipe. It's something that it's not necessarily an intellectual connection. It's a sense. We connect with it on a sensory level. I mean, almost an animal level, really. And I think that's a big aspect of Men's Adventure Magazine Spice, because there are tropes and themes that are hard to defend, and I think that's a key element of spice, that it is, I mean, in a lot of ways, we talked about the idea that spice could be considered sex, but...
Or sexy, like that.
Sexy, but I don't know, maybe more than sex. I mean, it's kink, really.
Yeah, because that's also got your bad guys doing bad things and a naked lady, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, last night in the great presentation by Will Murray and John Woolley on spicy pulps, you know, some of those covers, it's amazing. And they're more over the top than men's adventure magazines. And I was talking to John earlier, and I think one of the reasons for that is the spicy pulps and most pulp magazines did not depend on subscribers. That in men's adventure magazine realm, you had a lot of the top tier magazines and the mid tier magazines depended on going through the mail. They couldn't afford to lose their mail permit. The post office had different obscenity rules, strict, very strict obscenity rules. Those got whittled away at later on. But because the spices were sold mostly on newsstands, they could get away with things that were even more racy than that.
And I mean, one of the things that we discussed, the idea that in MAM, spice isn't tied to any specific geographic location or locale, though settings considered exotic are definitely a major part of it. But I mean, exotic covers a lot of territory. It can mean a tropical island paradise. It can mean a tropical hellhole. I mean, it could be a rat trap, low rent spot on the wrong side of town. Deserts are exotic. So are the Swiss Alps. So is a bordello. So is a harem, you know. So is a lawless sin town.
Sin towns, yes.
The Susimi underbelly is revealed in a nonfiction expose. These were very popular stories that sort of explored the spicy side of life geographically.
Well, those were generally photo features of, you know, the underbelly of Mars, Pennsylvania. Little did you know. They would have photos to go with it. And there's lots of sexposés, you know. Men's adventure magazines were really interested in sex. And they would do these sex expose stories. We call them sexposés. Some by top writers.
Yeah. Well, there's also the... I always like Bruce J. Friedman in his essay, Even the Rhinos Were Nymphos, which is included in our Weasels Rip My Flesh collection, available now and tomorrow all day long. Happy to sign them. He had made a comment saying... he referred to those to Sintown stories as scratch the surface stories. He'd say, this seems like an average American town, but scratch the surface. And of course, it's the wild goings on.
All kinds of things.
Nobody seems to know about.
Well, and the sexposés, I think, is a different element of spiciness than pulps, too, in that there were lots of stories about that were supposedly true, but they're fiction too, about prostitutes. Men's adventure magazines were fascinated with prostitutes.
Let me ask you to hold that thought, because okay. I want to get into that.
Okay, and just one other thing,
yeah.
Homosexuality, which at the time was, you know, pretty much verboten publicly, but they had many exposés on homosexuality as well.
We'll walk through some of the frequently spicy MAM themes and tropes. White Queen stories, clearly familiar from pulps. These are stories about snarling, dominant women, often white, but not always. Sometimes the race is left ambiguous. By unusual circumstances, they lead powerful and obedient troops of native warriors in foreign jungles. In this story, I was a slave to the Savage Blonde by E.C. Schirmacher. This appeared in Hunting Adventures, summer 1956.
Art by Al Rossi,
I mean, classic. We thought this might be our friend Ava Lind, but she says it's not her, even though she worked with Al Rossi quite a bit. This is actually a fairly wide-ranging exotic adventure story. It incorporates several jungle adventure staples, but the White Queen trope is the most prominent and spiciest.
And Schirmacher wrote for the pulps as
mm-hmm.
well.
So the illustration and the love slave aspect certainly scratched an itch for many readers, but the protagonist's actual love slavery is only as detailed as prevailing standards allowed. I think I mentioned this is included in our Weasels Rip My Flesh collection, as is. This is Barroom Girl Who Touched Off a Tribal War by the great Walter Kalin. That's from Mail, June 1960. Capitalizing on the violence surrounding the decolonization of Africa. It's a sweaty Congo set tale. It's part White Queen story, but predominantly Gorilla Girl adventure. Another frequent man trope, MAM trope, and a spicy one. Aggressive, libidinous, military women who fight, lead revolutionaries and warriors, male and female alike. Such women appeared frequently and always very sexily in MAMs, and they could be found hailing from all four corners of the globe.
And Walter Kalin, who wrote that story, continued to write for Men's Adventure magazines into the 70s. And his stories got increasingly sexual over the time, especially in late 60s, early 70s. It's pretty interesting. We knew Walter before he passed away. He's a really sweet guy, hell of a great writer.
Here's some examples from our Cuba Sugar, Sex, and Slaughter book. Sometimes these rebel women fought with us, sometimes against us. But readers just could not get enough. Actually, if we can, there's our book, if we could return to the Silk Panties Squadron for a moment. Bob, you've done quite a bit of research into this phenomenon. In this case, they're calling them the Silk Panties Squadron, but...
Well, that phrase showed up in like five different stories that I recall.
Lace Panty Commandos was the other
one? Silk Panty Commandos.
Silk Panties.
Yeah, they went everywhere.
But this was, again, there's a fetish element to this, to the fact that you have these powerful rebel women who are fighting like men at a time when that was not something that people necessarily expected, especially in Men's Adventure magazine. And of course, you know, this was also true of, there would be the Joy Girls stories.
Joy Girls, yes.
Where you have prostitutes who would step up and help fight for a noble cause, stand by the hero, defend the hero.
Yeah, especially in war stories, you know, they would, the local prostitutes would often be mistreated by the bad guys, whether they were Nazis or Japanese or some other bad guys, and they would help the American heroes fight. And they were good at it, actually, most times.
Even without pants,
yeah.
They managed to be real heroes. Look at a couple more of those. Obviously, this was a very, very appealing trope. Here we've got a whole boat of nurses who are... That's the other thing about Mam Spice that's kind of interesting. Any occupation that was done by women, it wasn't viewed as suspect, but it was definitely seemed like they were just waiting to turn it into some kind of sexual adventure tied into their career. So it's like, you know, in this case, of course, the nurses, they're all thrilled to be partying with these guys as their clothes fall off.
As depicted by Samson Pollock.
That's a Samson Pollock, all right. Okay. Animal attack stories.
Censorship. After last night? No, you didn't see last night's presentation on the Spices.
Oh, they went uncensored?
Mm.
Full nudity?
Yeah.
I had no idea. Animal attack stories definitely seem like an unlikely place for spice or sexiness. But Mam's managed to add some sexual aspect to just about every story. So it's not unusual at all to find some... what Bruce J. Friedman, or what Martin Goodman called hot words, in a story otherwise focused on beating back flesh-hungry critters. There is no spice to speak of in the iconic Weasels Rip My Flesh story, but the fine writer Robert Silverberg made certain to add spice to his tale of man and woman versus crabs. To be clear, they do run afoul of crabs, and it's not pretty, but not before a spot of lovemaking. Somewhat graphic for the era, not too, but yeah. He uses, at one point, I should have brought the actual quote, but I can't get it out of my head. He's talking about, he's describing his lady love in rather salacious terms throughout the story. And then, essentially, she's out in the water and doesn't realize it, then there's killer crabs that then attack her. And she's screaming, and he's gone back to the boat for a bottle of wine or something. And so he's like, oh my God, and he looks out and he sees her, and he says, he talks about that the crab is grabbing her, but she's nude, and he refers to her jouncing breasts. And I was like, jouncing.
Of course, Bob Silverberg is a pseudonym there, but he was also prolific in the whole realm of sleaze paperbacks. And there's a big crossover in those kinds of stories you did for those and the ones he did for Men's Adventure magazines.
I mean, while we're on the subject of Silverberg, I mean, there's probably no book we've worked on that is more in tune with vintage pulp spice than our collection, Exotic Adventures of Robert Silverberg. If you don't know the book, it collects pseudonymous fiction by Silverberg written for a short-lived mam called Exotic Adventures. There were six issues published between 58 and 59. None of the stories are science fiction, and none bore Silverberg's name on original publication. And though he obviously preferred writing science fiction fantasy, I mean, boy, could he write mam stories. And he wrote them spicy. Across the five issues of the magazine, I said there were six, but Bob sat one out. Silverberg hit one spicy mam target after another. Killer creatures with a hint of sex in the yarn? Check. Captive love slave story? Oh, yes. Human sacrifice? You got it. Safari noir? Yep. Entirely bogus anthropological study with a pronounced emphasis on sex? I watched the secret sex rites of Uganda. Who would miss them, frankly? We talked about Sin Town stories.
Yeah.
Of course, Bob Silverberg tackled that focusing on Juarez. Tribal marriage to a sexy native bride.
And I'm shocked that you censored all these.
I mean, it's Pulp Fest. You never know. There could be some impressionable minds coming in. What else we got? Oh, here we go. Okay.
Now, let me just say one thing about Exotic Adventures.
Yeah.
Because that was a short-lived magazine, didn't have any subscribers, it was a non-traditional men's adventure magazine. It was kind of a hybrid between a bachelor magazine and a men's adventure magazine. And it had nude photos at a time when most men's adventure magazines, the mainstream men's adventure magazines, were still doing glamour girl photos, you know, that didn't show the women topless. But Exotic Adventures was a little over the top. It's still more of a men's adventure magazine than a bachelor magazine because of stories like this, though.
I think we touched on the fact that a popular trope were islands of horny women, basically just waiting for some man or a couple men to show up. And so here's Bob Silverberg certainly tackled that here. Here. And here. Drugs, another popular topic.
Another kind of spicy element, no pun intended in terms of Dune, but the drugs were big in men's adventure magazines. Lots of, both in terms of some of the fiction stories, but a lot of the expose stories were about junkies and heroin, opium, marijuana. Big one.
And I mean, in a case like this, where it's part drug expose, but also tropical sort of travelogue. I mean, again, it's like just fusing all of these. I mean, so many of the best men's adventure magazine stories, they're stacking up these things. And I think that's part of what makes them spicy, too. Because it's unusual to have stories that have extreme violence in them, and then paired with not explicit, but candid sex, accounts of sex. And, you know, sex and violence, it's always tricky in every medium. Bob and I, we touched on it before, the idea that in movies, it's one thing to have nudity, but if there's blood in the scene with the nudity, that's a huge problem because of that taboo, that enduring taboo of sex and violence together, or sort of just sharing the same space.
Well, one of the things that's kind of interesting to me is when the 1954 Comics Code was adopted after, you know, Friedrich Wertham's Seduction of the Innocent book that made people think that comics were warping the minds of our children and causing them to be killers and rapists and have sex and all kinds of things. And the congressional hearings were held. So the Comics Code came in, and what the ironic effect of that was, like Stanley Morse was a big comic book publisher, and he had comic books like Battlecry. Well, when the Comics Code came in, he said, well, screw them, and he turned Battlecry Comic into Battlecry Men's Adventure Magazine. And so then he didn't have to worry about the Comics Code. And a number of other publishers who were doing comics after the Comics Code put more emphasis on publishing men's adventure magazines.
All right, Silverberg's lighthearted smuggling adventure with a sexual component.
I'm so glad you protected us from that one.
Some of these illustrations, that's the thing about Exotic Adventures too, is because it was a magazine that was, I don't want to say thrown together, but it was definitely a magazine with some with sketchy origins. And so some of the artwork that illustrates the stories is pretty bad, as you've seen some of these. So, but now I like this one, but this is an exception, I would say, too. See, and now the other thing too, prostitution. Again, this is like the fusion of exotica and prostitution, a constant. And it wasn't just American prostitutes, it was prostitutes, period, all over the world. The readers were very intrigued by the global marketplace.
But the other thing I'll say about Silverberg's stories in Exotic Adventures, and not just because we collected them in a book, they're damn good.
Yeah.
He could not write bad stories. Every one of his stories, they're well constructed, well written. They're fun to read.
I mean, are you guys seeing? I mean, we feel it's kind of obvious, but are you guys seeing the parallels between a lot of this stuff and the pulps, like how they were swiping this stuff, or continuing it? Really, just these are tropes that even today have a certain freshness and appeal to them. So, okay. This is, now we're moving into prisoner of war, or prisoner in general, just prisoner abuses, which is, it's a bit of a thorny area. We'll look at one more Silverberg here, the Arabian slave girl racket. Just to show you that in six issues of Exotic Adventures, I mean, Silverberg really managed to deliver a nearly full range of MAM tropes, all heavy on the spice. I think the thing that people tend to really criticize men's adventure magazines harshly for are stories like this. POW stories, Nazi torment fiction. It has elements of yellow peril fiction carried over from the pulps, for sure.
And the Japanese, there were covers of men's adventure magazines with Japanese torturing both women and American prisoners of war.
Our friend Ava Lind, who we did a book with Ava, she was popular men's adventure model. She worked quite a bit with Norm Eastman, who is, I guess, one of the most raw. His paintings were certainly some of the more raw.
Well, some of the most infamous, anyway, because they had so many. He did a lot of the sweat mag covers with Nazis and bikers and things like that. And Ava was in many of them. And Ava, we asked Ava about working with Norm, and she said, he was the nicest, sweetest man I ever knew, you know? And in fact, the other interesting thing about some of these with the Nazi covers, for example, is they were published by a lot of the most infamous ones were published by Reese and MT, those two different publishers. They were connected, B.R. Bud Ampolsk and Maurice Rosenfeld, two nice Jewish guys. And they would sit around with Norm Eastman and come up with new ways to show torture in the cover paintings. Many of which, hey, is not a laughing matter. The Nazis did incredibly terrible things, but they came up with things that were just off the wall in their covers.
I mean, it's kink, right? It's curiosity. This is curiosity about or an established interest in taboo subjects, deviations from the established norms. I mean, in a lot of ways, your best and your worst fantasies, stuff you might rather not acknowledge a curiosity about or interest in.
But except for the fact that you got Nazis, a lot of these are not that different from shutter pulps, some of the spicy pulps, things like that. You know, you had many of the same kinds of scenes on those. It always makes me laugh when, you know, people who don't know much about either men's adventure magazines or pulps look at the Nazi covers and say, oh my God, there's never been anything like that, has it? That's a terrible. And I say, well, have you ever seen some of the shutter pulps or the spicy pulps?
And Ava had told, well, first off, Ava found herself having to defend these covers to her friends when our book came out. Her contemporaries seemed scandalized, some of them, not some of her friends, seemed sort of scandalized by it. And I think that has to do with the misperception that the Nazi figures in these stories were in some way protagonists or heroic, which is never the case. There's never any identification with the Nazis. But again, it's this odd situation because it's obviously the stories are meant to titillate.
Well, the Nazis were always the bad guys in the stories.
Yeah.
And the hero is often coming. I don't know if there's one coming in these in the background. Usually,
yeah.
often there's an American soldier coming to save them. Sometimes the Nazis are torturing American prisoners of war, and there's women coming to save them. But the Nazis were not glorified. And what's of course there's a subset of people probably who got off on the bondage and torture aspects, but that wasn't what I don't think most of the readers were after. It was more whatever the attraction of the shutter pulps and the spicy pulps is. It's kind of like over the top action adventure stuff with a dash of sex and violence and blood.
Yeah, I mean it's freaky stuff. You know, these are strange attractions that that are often hard to defend. But there's something about the potency of the imagery in these stories that stays with us and remains a big deal.
Ava's still alive and well, by the way, thankfully.
Yes. I mean, we haven't included a lot of sweat fiction in our books, but it's a legitimate but overexposed.
In her book that we did with her, mm-hmm. Is probably the most that we have.
Yeah, because she did so much of it.
Yeah.
Another few covers with Ava. Now there, you've got a little bit more in the first cover. You can see there's playing more of a heroic figure. Okay, then there's what I would call voyeur spice, or in this case, explainers. They might also be called demystifiers because they're presented as nonfiction reports examining controversial topics and can often seem written as a means to ease more conservative readers' anxieties about societal changes or to rile those same readers up. MAM editors recognize the curious pleasure that readers took in outrage, as we still do today, and they pursued subjects accordingly. Now, MAM's editorial voices tended to keep on equal footing with the reader, a technique suggesting that the gang in a given magazine's bullpen are ordinary Joes, much like the reader, who want to understand the changing world around them. In many MAM nonfiction explorations of cultural trends and phenomena, the narrators and reporters are fishes out of water. They're exploring subcultures in search of some understanding or thrills. This story, Beat Girls, we included in Weasels Rip My Flesh. It's a good example of an explainer in that it's partly dismissive, partly sympathetic to what are being presented as trend followers. Essentially, an experienced man about town takes a pal on a tour of beatnik parties, which the friend has heard can get pretty racy.
Well, and even though the Men's Adventure magazine audience was mostly, you know, World War II veterans, guys in rural areas of the country who never went to a beatnik party, they wanted to know what it was like, you know? Same way, you know, they also wanted to know what it was like to be a hippie. What were those hippies doing? And there were lots of stories about them, too, that were often pretty spicy.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like MAMS saw it as their duty almost to take the air out of culture balloons like this, reassuring the readers that there's nothing new under the sun and there's often no one behind the curtain of such trends. This story, Beat Girls, ultimately argues that beats and beatniks are simply bohemians made trendy and they don't really have much new to offer. Explainers frequently reassured MAM readers that even if they weren't part of the scene, cultures, or activity the story described, they probably really weren't missing all that much anyway. And I contend this is true of a lot of MAM content. They first inspire, then attempt to satisfy readers' curiosities about a subject or a story. But in the process, I say the stories tend to reassure readers, either by insisting it's just old wine in a new bottle, and/or that what's happening isn't nearly as exciting as you might think, or even as exciting as the magazines were painting them to be in the first place. Take, for example, She Doesn't Want You is by Lawrence Block, writing as Sheldon Lord, one of his frequent pseudonyms. It's an explainer from Real Men, June 1958. It's included in Weasels Rip My Flesh, and in our Lawrence Block collection, The Naked and the Deadly. It is a sexpose of prostitution, purporting to show the truth behind the fantasy. Sexpose stories we touched on a little bit, they're generally mashups of fiction and explainers. More accurately, creative nonfiction in the guise of an explainer.
But another example of a writer who couldn't write bad stories. I mean, Lawrence Block's one of the greatest writers in the world, you know? And he was writing for Men's Adventure magazines, and even when he was doing the wildest and craziest stories like this, they're still fun to read. They're still well written.
In this story, Sheldon Lord, he interviews experienced prostitutes about their lives and work. The content itself is not explicit, but the subject was still quite daring.
He said he interviewed them.
Can we admit that we did not manage to squeeze out of him how much of his nonfiction was actually nonfiction in working with him?
Yeah, he didn't tell us.
There's some things he's written that suggest that that his nonfiction is fiction, but when we were putting that book together, he had nothing to say about that. In 1958, even frank discussion of sex work, I mean, would it be considered very racy and not something found in most mainstream magazines. Another thing to mention about the Beat Girl story is the guys in the story, the narrator and his friend, they are both referred to, I think it was a Life magazine spread about beatnik parties. And so there's a good example of them, the story was inspired by the fact that this beatnik story ran in Life magazine and piqued people's curiosities about, so Men's Adventure magazine's ready to step in. We will tell you all about beatniks. We'll give you the straight dope. You know, what you're not reading about in Time magazine, we're gonna give you here. In Men's Adventure magazines, and I think this is true of the pulps too, spice is not so much one thing as it is a combination of things. If we're really going to ride this metaphor into the ground, let's call Mam Spice more of a rub than any single ingredient. It's a combination of sex and violence and or the forbidden. I mean, spice is not specifically extreme or graphic violence, though violence can be a key component.
Interracial sex?
Interracial sex comes up often. In the White Queen stories we saw, there's definitely the implication that these queens are probably having sexual relationships with all these with their warriors. I mean, in the Walter Kaelin story, the illustration, the woman is perched on the shoulders of one of her soldiers in a way that I can't even imagine another magazine even putting a black character and an ostensibly white character in that kind of erotic pose. I think it would be an absolute scandal at the time. I mean, spice is sex for sure, but it's not just sex. Illicit sex, erotic sex, power play sex, hard-boiled, backstabbing, double-crossing sex. But for all the attention that sex got in the magazines and for all the racy headlines and arousing illustrations, what was on the page was often more tease and coded language. It wasn't hardcore. And that's true of the writing for most of Mam's lifespan.
Up until 1967, when there was another seminal court case. It was that's the Jacobellis case, that where Justice Potter said, you know, obscenity, he couldn't quite define it, but he knows it when he sees it. And when that decision came down, that kind of opened the floodgates for more explicit things in magazines, movies, especially men's adventure magazines. But that was also part of their downfall.
I mean, we can see here, this is from 1971. This is by the great Walter Kaelin. It's a Shaggy Dog story of, see if you can follow this. Stewardesses turned independent prostitutes, turned abducted sex slaves, and the private eye who helps them out of captivity. I mean, this is over a decade after Lawrence Bloch's sexpose, and as the photo montage shows, things were much more permissive. We're running out of time? All right.
Yep.
I think it's instructive to compare covers from the two eras. The first cover is an Exotic Adventures from Robert Silverberg's 58-59 run on the magazine. The other is the December 1971 For Men Only that the Kaelin story comes from. In both cases, you'll see the majority of the cover headlines scream sex. But look at the differences in how they scream it. By 71, things are clearly loosening up. In men's adventure magazines, the emphasis was predominantly on exploitation of the wild and unconventional. But by a story's finish, could reveal an unexpected hollowness or even disaster that can lurk behind the sensational. By selling the reader visions of excess and life lived on the edge that ultimately proved lethal or at least disappointing for characters, I say one could argue they may have unwittingly helped readers more easily accept an average workaday life. I mean, they may have even helped some readers be grateful for one.
Escapism.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's not what most people think of as one of the keys to Mam's success and enduring popularity in their time, but we have found that reassurance is an overlooked but essential aspect of their personality. Whether the reader was conscious of it or of being catered to in that way or not, I mean, but Mams were all about having it both ways. They'd appeal to readers' basic instincts and interests by packing the mags with sex and violence-driven stories and imagery, emphasizing forbidden excitement, abandon, and excess. But ultimately, these aspects didn't always play out to characters' advantage. Even stories that don't end tragically can still seem hardly worth the risk by the finish. And isn't that spice? I mean, a little goes a long way, but too much is too much.
Well, and real quick,
yeah.
Got a couple more minutes?
Not really.
No, never mind. Okay, anyway, I'll just say this. As men's adventure magazines, after that 1964 Supreme Court case, got sexier, tried to compete more directly with Playboy, it was basically their death knell, too. They started to fade out. They couldn't really compete with Playboy. You know, they started having topless photos and so forth. But eventually that led to their downfall. They lost their original audience, the World War II veterans and the guys who hunted and fished out in the rural areas, and they couldn't really keep up with Playboy and Hustler and all those kinds of magazines. So, you know, they tried in the late 60s, early 70s. By the mid 70s, the whole men's adventure magazine genre was gone. It really didn't exist. They hung on it a little bit, you know, kind of, but it wasn't the same.
If they had just stuck to Spice instead of explicit material, we might still be reading the new issues today. Thank you very much. I'm sorry we don't have any time for questions. We went so long. Thank you.
You've been listening to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. Brought to you by The Pulp Net. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at The Pulp Net. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at thepulp.net. Subscribe to Pulp Tales on your favorite podcast platform or listen to us on the web at thepulp.net. If you enjoy our content, please like us or leave us a review. And tell your fellow pulp fans about Pulp Tales. Thank you for listening and keep reading the pulps. Pulp Tales is copyright 2024 by William P. Lampkin.